You're listening to highlights from the One Planet podcast interview with author and entrepreneur Paul Hawken. This podcast is supported by the Jan Michalski Foundation.
It starts with a quote from Bayo Okamolafe, and it just says, there are things we must do, sayings we must say, thoughts we must think that look nothing like the images of success that have so thoroughly possessed our vision of justice. So that to me is a very important quote to precede the whole book, you know, to lead into the whole book. The first paragraph says, carbon moves ceaselessly through the four realms, the biosphere, oceans, land, and atmosphere. It flows in rivers and veins, soil and skin, breath and wind. It is the narrator of lives born and lost, futures feared and imagined. It is the courier coursing through every particle of our existence, the interwoven lattice that permeates cultures, lagoons, mines, grasslands, organisms, and our temporal life. Carbon's dance of life does not take sides. It's never right or wrong. It is a timeless path that endlessly unwinds before us. Like Ariadne's thread, the flow of carbon is a story that may allow us to escape the labyrinth of anxiety, ignorance, and fear the world bequeaths. Carbon's increase in the atmosphere moves in tandem with the loss of the living world. The book of life encircles what has always regulated climate, the pulsing living mantle we call Earth. I think like everybody, I read and I listen and I watch, particularly about the environment, about climate, about the narratives that are put out into the world, about what is happening, what has happened, what will or might happen, or almost surely will happen. And they're primarily based around threat and fear. They're primarily based on suppositional facts, which I wouldn't argue against, by the way. I think they're good. The science is really good. It's a narrative that has infused our lives, who care about each other, about our place, about creatures, about living here, about our children. But that narrative is one that basically is about less reduce, about really blaming fossil fuel companies, for sure, governments and politicians and, you know, obviously large corporations. And so there we are. And that's kind of the quote-unquote narrative. And then there are books, and I think Drawdown was probably the first one to really accomplish a list of solutions, like this is what you can do. It was always meant to be followed by regeneration. And the difference between the two books is vast in a way, because Drawdown was really about stopping emissions and sequestering carbon. So it was bringing it back home. And regeneration was about creating more life on Earth. And that's it. Regeneration is fundamental and intrinsic to every living organism, including every cell in our body. And I wanted to really introduce that as the pathway forward. Carbon, the book of life, really came out in response to the objectification of nature, of carbon. You know, like there's carbon offsets. There's nature offsets now. There's nature credits. There's this idea that somehow if we can make the whole world of carbon a marketplace, and that people go in there, and entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley, and somehow we'll use the marketplace as a way to, you know, solve or fix the climate problem. And I put these all in air quotes, really. And what I wanted to do is sort of pull back and say, first of all, carbon's not a thing, and we're objectifying it as if it was a thing. Of course, it is one of the elements, you know, so in that sense, but it is as if it was isolated, as if it was the bad boy, our problem child in our culture, you know, in our civilization. We got to go combat and tackle and all those things, climate change. And so I want to pull back and say, well, wait. You know, we have 1.2 trillion carbon molecules in every cell. We have 30 some odd trillion cells, and that's us. So carbon is really a flow that just animates everything that we love, that we enjoy, that we eat, that our children, all plant life, all sea life. Everything that is alive on this planet is animated by the flow of carbon. And so we want to see the situation we're in as a flow. Okay, where the flow is coming from, and why are we interfering with them? Why are we crushing them? Why are we killing them? For sure. But also to see the wonder, the awe, the astonishment of life itself. And to have that sensibility being the one that is the overriding narrative of us acting in the world and what we do, how we live, how we talk to each other. Because unless we change this conversation about climate into something that's a conversation about more, literally more, which is more life, better conditions for people in terms of social justice, restoring so much of what we lost, you know, we get the data that we've lost 73, I think, latest data in the wildlife and mammals and animals in the last 50 years. Like, that's just, it's shocking, you know, when you get that data, but you don't know what to do with it. You know, what can I do? What can I do? And so I wanted to move away from the guilt, if you will, or the compulsion, because it doesn't work to talk that way to people. After 50 years, Mia, 50 years of climate being in the news and in science and in our schools, and less than a fraction of 1% of people in the world do anything about it on a daily basis. You say, no, it's true. He's like, how could that be? And this is civilizational, you know, this is not like a problem, a national problem. It's not politics. This is a civilizational crisis. And for less than 1% to be engaged and do something means that our communication, something wrong with it. I'm not talking about the people are wrong, or the science is wrong, or the facts is wrong, but the narrative itself is not one that really entices people, draws them in, brings in everyone with a shared understanding of what we face and then what to do about it. And the first thing to do about it is to care and to feel that care. And I wanted carbon to be the subtitle of the book of life, because it is really the book of life, and without which there is no life. And so, yeah, it was 10 years in thinking about it and seeing the success of Drawdown Regeneration actually only amplified, I felt, the need to have a different narrative out there that didn't exclude those narratives, but included a larger sense of self and the idea that our life, our soul, our bodies, ourselves are inseparable from the living world. They're not like others, not like there's a climate crisis. We are climate. It's not there's a biodiversity crisis. We are those creatures. We are those cells. We are that. And so that inextricability of human beings and life on this planet was something that indigenous people understood and do understand and have practiced forever, as long as they've been here. And it's something we colonists, we people who have been so well educated in Western science, have to really step back and look at is how did we create this world of duality, where we separate ourselves and think ourselves better, and that we can take and extract in the world. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not meant to be a critique. It's meant to be an opening to the fact that we may not actually know yet where we live. I don't think we've been taught about this planet as children. I went to school, went to college, served you, and we took the classes and read the books. I don't think we actually know where we live. And so carbon was sort of like lifting a leaf up, you know, from the ground, and you see, oh my God, there's all these creatures underneath. Carbon is like that for the whole of the earth, which is open it up and look at, oh my goodness, you know, that's where we live. And it is just a miracle. It's extraordinary. So that's what we want to enhance and save. When people talk about saving the earth, you know, and the earth doesn't need saving. It's we need to save our awareness. We need to reimagine who we are, and to each other and to all other living beings. If we look at ourselves as visitors for a minute, and then what would we think? And then, well, if we visited a favela where people are suffering and they're deprived, that's one area where we visited. If we go to the Amazon, to the headwaters, and meet the Achuar people, we'd have a completely different sense of this planet. And those are very real things. But in between all that is like 3.4 trillion creatures. That's just creatures that walk and fly and buzz that are in constant communication. They're constantly communicating. Our education, Western European, is like, well, we had the brain, we can talk, nobody else can. Then slowly there's this thing, well, okay, primates do seem to communicate and they can learn. There's this grudging acceptance that other animals and creatures have consciousness, they can communicate, they can remember. And what we're seeing right now, Mia, is an explosion. There's just a raft of young, extraordinary scientists, you know, women and men who are going out into the natural world with and without, but instrumentation, bioacoustics, and recording and parsing and looking at the animal kingdom, the insects, and coming back with astonishing reports in science about snakes can identify different snakes. They have personalities. He's like, what? A snake has a personality? Mother bats speak a certain dialect of, they call it motherese for lack of any other description. They name their children. They warn them off, some of the male bats who are predatory, and beginning to understand that, in fact, every creature on earth is in communication with at least themselves and others, and that we live on a sensate, conscious planet. And it's much more interesting to think about us as wanting to listen or to appreciate all the voices instead of thinking we're the only voice, which is very lonely if you think about it, and that we're in charge. We're not in charge. We're in charge of one thing, which is destroying life on Earth. We're doing that, but that's not being in charge. That's being a fool. Nothing else is doing that. There is no other creature doing what we're doing. We're one of 8.4 billion different species. And we're the only one who's decided to double glaze the planet and ruin life on Earth with our mining and our pollution and our plastics. And so, yeah, it's just like sort of stopping, you know, this book is to stop and take a look. It's not, this is not my story. This isn't fiction. I'm not telling you, you know, there's some great writers who do that. I'm just saying, this is where you live. This is who we are. This is our brothers and sisters, if you can use pronouns for all the other creatures, maybe not. But the point being, it's our family, and our life depends entirely on the whole of life, not on technology, not on Silicon Valley, not on Elon Musk, not on lies and cheats and people who accumulate capital and money, you know. It's actually so much different, so different, so more exquisite than the world that we are confronted with when we open up the New York Times or the Guardian or go online every day and go, oh my God, that's happening. But what is also happening is people like you and others around the world, unheralded, they don't make the news, they don't make headlines and so forth, who are restoring life on Earth on all single level out of respect and out of love and of grief too, you know, for this seeing what is being lost and has been lost. And that's like, you know, I'm a Californian. I don't like the word fight, but yes, we fought. I was a firefighter. And in the Sierras when I was a lad. And the one thing about the fires in California, because we're so prone to fires, and always will be, by the way, but you go after the fire is over, you put it out, you know, it's just a black carbon landscape, right? But you go back in the spring and you see grasses and wildflowers and this just peculiar green color because it's so nourished by all the ashes of the grasses. And there are seeds, wildflower seeds, that actually can only break the carapace and come out and grow after they've been subjected to extreme heat. So when you get these fires, you know, you'll get plants you hadn't seen for 50, 100 years, you know, flowers blooming and so forth. This is what's happening now. I mean, the earth is burning. Civilization is in an act of self-immolation itself, you know, it's killing itself. But underneath that is this extraordinary understanding of human beings wanting to regenerate, restore life on earth. And it's the action of it itself is, it's how you restore yourself too. So it's not just other, it's the same thing. And when you're there, whether you're a farmer, whether you're a forester, a mycologist, whatever it is, you are now the flow of life. It's the flow of carbon. And that's the book of life. And we've just lost our way, you know, for the last 500 years, we being, you know, Homo sapiens, we've lost our way completely. And we're not going to solve it by some new technology. It's not going to do it. Technology is not leading us to where we want to go.
We hope you've enjoyed this program and listening to the highlights of this podcast. If you'd like to get involved in One Planet Podcast or learn more about environmental projects, click on the subscribe button. Thank you for listening.